Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Time, I struggled to figure out how couples go from the heady early days of spending time and energy thinking about how to make each other happy to that old familiar, what have you done for me lately? I knew about this cliche, familiarity breeds contempt, but I wasn't clear on why this actually happens. Because we promise to love, honor, and cherish each other, but frequently end up barely tolerating each other. So how is it that the love that started out so promising gets so off track? Well, to take a look at one reason this happens, I'm joined by Nancy Collier. She's a psychotherapist, interfaith minister, and the author of The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in the Virtual World, which I love that because I'm always like turning stuff off. People go, did you see this on Facebook? It's like, no. But anyway, that's a conversation for a whole other day. But Nancy, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this because, like I said, for a long time it was like, what is the missing piece? What happens to couples? And, you know, you wrote an article, Can a Relationship Recover from Resentment, that appears on the Psychology Today website. And in that article, you state that the common reasons that couples have struggles, the things that people talk about, sex and money, which I believe are number one and number two, or flip, they're not the real reasons that people are struggling. And you say that the biggest problem is something called the battle for empathy. So what is this and how does it happen?
So thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here. The battle for empathy is when a couple has tabled a whole bunch of different things they don't like about the other. So little by little, something bothers you, you put it away, or it doesn't get resolution, and the hurt from it continues. And this goes on, you know, for years. And little by little, you get to a place where anything that you bring to your partner essentially can't be empathized by that partner, and it can't be empathized with by that partner any longer because they're carrying so much resentment against you. So you say, you know, that really hurt me when you did X, and they say, well, I did X because you did Y. And then you say, well, I did Y because you did Z. And back and back and back, and we lose over time if we're not really conscious and very careful. We lose touch with kind of a starting place where your hurt or your upset or your irritation or whatever it is matters just because it's happening. We have to be very mindful and active about staying out of this resentment trap and this who's to blame trap.
The who's to blame. Yeah, it's one of the things I tell people, you know, that when you're part of a couple, you have a built-in scapegoat. You know, you just look, it's like, well, if you wouldn't do this, then I wouldn't do this other thing, or if you wouldn't do this, then all of our problems would be solved. And it's like, okay, that's not the way it works.
Right. And in that way, you know, relationships can be used, our partner can be used as our spiritual teacher to reflect back on ourselves, or they can be used as a kind of spiritual prison, as a way of staying away from all of our own work, our own growth, what is happening to me in this interaction. When we're just pointing the finger and we really believe that if our partner could just be the way we want them to be, then we'd be happy. When we're locked into that belief, and also usually what goes with that is I can control this person into being that way. And then we can be happy when we really have our well-being staked on turning our partner into someone who knows how to listen, someone who's optimistic, someone who, whatever it is that we want, then we're really stuck. So part of what I teach couples is liberating themselves from this idea that it's your partner's responsibility to make you happy.
Oh, that is what, because I will actually ask my clients, you know, and they will actually flat out tell me that that's their, that that is their job to make their partner happy. And it's about that point in time that I just like go through the room because it's like, now wouldn't that be great? I've talked about it before on the show, which is something I call Leslie World. And in Leslie World, everything is exactly the way I want it to be when
of
I
course.
Want it to be that way. And my
problem is
I just can't get anybody else to buy into it, you know?
Right. Reality doesn't catch up. That's the problem. It doesn't participate.
Right. And this idea of resentment, I talk about, because I now live in the South, so for anybody who's been in the South, they're familiar with this plant called kudzu, which just grows and grows and, like, absorbs everything and takes over. It's just this horrible plant that you can't get rid of. And so I talk about resentment being the kudzu of relationships, that it will, if you allow it to flourish, then it's going to strangle your relationship.
It does. It really takes away the joy from a relationship. And part of what happens in long-term relationships and that breeds this kind of resentment is that we lose two primary ingredients, again, if we're not really conscious. And we can start being conscious at any moment. We can restart our relationship at any moment. But is one thing we lose is curiosity. So as we go on in a relationship, we start to think we know, right? We know about our partner. We know what they do. We know why they do it. We think that all the narratives we've constructed in our mind are objective truth, right? So the more we get our partner locked in a box, the less we're willing to empathize with that partner because we're not curious anymore about what really makes you behave in that way that I find troublesome. Or if I can maintain a sense of empathic curiosity and don't assume that I know who this person is, everything about them, we must start our day with a sense of curiosity with our partner and give our partner the dignity to be different, to change, to have different motivations, to not wrap them up with our pseudo-knowing. The other thing that happens, you know, as resentment and all these little hurts start to sedimentize, if you will, at the bottom of the river that is our relationship, that we lose that absolute necessary ingredient, appreciation. Right? We stop noticing on a moment-by-moment basis, well, I really appreciated the way you made me laugh there. I really appreciated that you took the kids to school when I didn't feel that well. Whatever it is, resentment starts to tug away at appreciation, which is the juice of a good relationship.
Well, and I love your pointing out about, you know, the assumption, and of course there's a very famous expression about what happens when we assume, that the assumption that I know what my partner is thinking, I know why they did what they did, I know that because they did it in the past, they're going to be continuing to do it in the future, which then, of course, means that my partner has no capacity to learn. And you've really put them in a straitjacket.
That's right. And it assumes, again, this really, really, really dangerous truth, which is my interpretations about his intentions, right, which are, of course, always about me. The I is always at the center of everyone else's intentions, are true, right? So that step gets leapt over without even noticing it, that what I'm assuming is motivating this partner is motivating them. So that storyline I've created, which goes through my conditioning, my wounds, my memories, blah, blah, that all of that I wrap up into a story about his intentions and what he's doing to me. And then again, I believe that. I'm fused with that thought. That's the truth. So, and then I act accordingly, which generates a tremendous amount of resentment because I've created a narrative, I believe, and then off I go to the races, right? So it's the believing that my subjective experience, the narrative I've written, which of course I come back to over and over and over again as I Velcro myself to this negative experience, that's truth. And then I'm in a relationship with my narrative, no longer with my partner. There's no curiosity. I don't know what was happening in his day that he did that. I don't know what he's afraid of. I don't know what's motivating him. But I've got such an airtight narrative that I'm stuck.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I haven't talked about this book for a while, and I can't even remember. It was not written by a single person. It came out of a foundation, and it was called I just cannot believe I just forgot the title of the book. But my husband read it, and it was ostensibly a business book. And I started, and he said, "You might find this interesting." So I started reading it, and it was not a business book at all. It was all about relationships, and it's something in self. It's called Leadership and Self Deception is the name of the book, and the self deception part is those stories that we tell ourselves. You know, that we know what the right thing to do is. We know we should call our partner when we're going to be late. We know we should offer to take the kids to school if, you know, they didn't sleep well or they're sick. You know, but we don't want to do it, so then we come up with all these reasons why it's okay not to. You know,
sure,
well, like, well, my partner
doesn't
really, my partner doesn't deserve it because, you know, whatever.
That's right.
Blew the button last month or whatever the reason was. And
sure.
It's this getting locked in and the idea that there could be another reason for why my partner did this. I talk about giving your partner the benefit of the doubt that if there's like three or four different ways to interpret what your partner's doing, can you pick the best one?
That's right. And also, you know, with that, what really changed my life in my long marriage is a couple things. One is it's not up to me to control this. Whatever is happening outside of me with him, I'm not in charge of it, right? Because part of the suffering, certainly for myself and many of my clients, comes from this idea of, I have to fix this. I have to figure out how to get this to the reality that I want. And as we know, in any long-term relationship, you know, that's a recipe for failure. But also that when I stopped assuming, once again, that I knew anything about why he did anything. I mean, it sounds like a step away from intimacy, but when I really truly distrusted my own storyline about anything, about him, about that, I don't even assume the best. I assume nothing. And then I am willing to bring in, hey, why'd you do that? That I can say that hurt me, but I can't say why. And I'm also very careful, and I, you know, teach my clients for sure that if you start paying attention to how much time you spend injecting moments of well-being with your grievances in your relationship, it's remarkable that we actually bring those back and back and back again and again. And what we're doing really is solidifying our resentment, solidifying our sureness about this partner, and solidifying our suffering at the bottom of it. So assuming nothing, that we have to be able to get back to that place no matter how long our relationship has been going on. And coming back to, you know, part of what goes away in this path to resentment as we're talking about, is the ability to care about what you're experiencing separate from this imposed assumption and judgment that I'm to blame for it. So if you're really struggling and fearful about money, right, I can't really even open that dialogue because somehow I'm supposed to rescue you. I'm supposed to do something about it, right? But if I can listen to your fear about money without feeling I have to solve this, we're two separate entities, I don't have to solve this for you, then suddenly my heart opens, right? And I'm not blamed for it happening. I drop that whole, most people have a touch of codependence, you know, so there's a sense of I am somehow responsible for your well-being. But that's the centerpiece that at some deep level we have to let go of and let this person, the best way we can take care of them is to really listen to how they are without it being our fault or ours to fix or any of it.
Well, and that's really interesting, and we're going to talk more about this in just a minute, but this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm talking with psychotherapist and interfaith minister Nancy Collier about the impact of resentment on relationships. And, you know, if this has become a problem in your relationship, it's not too late. The damage can be repaired, but it first needs to stop. And the first step is to get some help. So I invite you to reach out for that help today. You can give me a call or send me an email and set up your Create Your Happily Ever After transformation session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's area code 919-924-0463. Or you can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And I want to get back to this idea that there is a way for couples to move through this. And I love, Nancy, that you talk about, and it seems to be something that's so difficult, of letting go of fixing something about the other person. And I, you know, and I hear that goes back to, it's my job to make my partner happy. It's like, no. It's not your job.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But we are also... I don't think human beings like to be uncomfortable in any way. I just don't think we do, which is fine. But so when my partner is hurt or my partner is bothered by something, I want the discomfort to go away. I want it to stop. And I think is that not part of the, both part of the problem and also part of the way back?
It is, and that is a form of empathy, right? But often what that is I want to end my own anxiety that this person is not okay, right? So if we learn to listen, the problem is, you know, once resentment starts to form then we really don't know how to listen anymore, because while the other person is talking about something that bothered them, we have such a long laundry list of, well, that bothered you? You want to know what bothered me? Right? So again, my wounds haven't been taken care of. So we have this faulty understanding that if I open my heart to you, I'm either assuming responsibility and blame for what you're saying, or what I experience doesn't matter. So we see it as this sort of zero sum. So if I care about, wow, you're struggling, whether I agree with the fact that you think I did that on purpose and I know my intention was not, if I can open my heart to you, I don't assume, I'm saying, I hear that's true for you. I get it, but it felt like I did it, even if I know I did not mean to do that. But when I do that, right, and I open my heart, I am in no way saying that my experience also doesn't matter, which on another day, which we'll talk about as we go forward, on another day, I'm going to express what was my experience of that. But they need to coexist. And until we can realize that it's and, not but, you were hurt, I get it. and I didn't mean it, and both are valid.
Yeah, and I love your description about that zero-sum game, and that's what I talk about all the time. Rarely is it either or; it's almost always both and.
That's right.
But part of that, I think, is exactly what you're talking about. Of do I feel heard? Are my feelings acknowledged, and not necessarily anything more than I get that this is the way you feel. Not some of the, well, if you were offended, you know, or, no.
Sure.
But it's really, because that goes to the curiosity point about, oh, this person is different from me. This person has a different perception, experience. I mean, it was funny, I was talking to a client the other day, and he was actually stunned because she was talking about what she perceived as flaws and, you know, and not being very good at. And he's looking at her like, what are you talking about? You're fantastic. But, you know, like I said, yeah, we all take a look at our worst, you know, hold on to the worst part of ourselves, and we don't see ourselves the way that other people do. So when we start talking about stuff, they look at us like, who are you?
That's right. And what you're talking about is, as you know, the most primal craving that we as human beings have, which is to just have a place where your experience is heard and known. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you think about it. It doesn't matter, you know, but we get so caught up in a battle for who's right. Who's right about happened in that interaction, right?
I tell people, if it's not tape recorded or on a video, you're going to be having that argument for years because you experience that event differently.
Exactly. There are two different, completely valid experiences. So when we're battling for, well, if we determine in this, you know, imaginary courtroom here that the way you experienced it is the correct way, the truthful way, then the other person is deprived of that experience of, but I get it that your experience was this, and was different, was the way you experienced it. Mm-hmm. And as you say, you know, we're all constantly battling to get our partners to just simply let our experience be what it is. Don't fix it. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me why it's wrong. Don't tell me why I'm interpreting it wrong. Don't do anything. Just open your heart and, you know, look at me in the eyes and care about what I'm saying. Listen, even if you can't care about it, just hear it.
Just hear it.
Yeah.
And so you talk about one way to resolve these, because getting away from this and moving, and this is the reason why I tell people that they actually probably need to get help, because if they're locked in this pattern, they don't even necessarily recognize the pattern, and second off, they have no idea how to get out of it, especially if they've been doing it for a while. But you actually talk about one way to resolve these old issues and communicate about new ones is something that you call the taking turns way. So what is this, and how exactly does it help people get back on track?
Well, first of all, there has to be a mutual acknowledgement, or at least one partner has to acknowledge, listen, you know, we've got a lot of resentment under the bridge, and it's sort of toxifying our relationship. So I think we need to talk with someone. That's a really good place to start. And to acknowledge that we, you know, we're stuck in this place where there are wounds that have been unhealed. They're just not healed. And we're building a foundation on that toxic ground, and it's not going to work. So one partner at least needs to be conscious. And then what I suggest people do is make a decision, if you want to be in this relationship, that we have to press the restart button. And the restart button means we have to form a new ground zero where we start now. So if something happens and it's bothersome, there's no back end to it. There's no, and that happened because we're starting fresh. It's almost like an imaginary we just met, right? We haven't, it has to be done in a conscious way. And when one partner, and I suggest people do this daily, one partner brings something to their partner, something that bothered them, something they appreciated, it doesn't really matter. And the partner simply, what we were describing before, listens. And they say it back to them in a, until the speaking partner feels, okay, that was heard correctly. So they don't change the punctuation. They don't, you know, they don't do anything with the voice. And until that, and then there's no rebuttal. There's no rebuttal. It just simply is allowed to stand. The next day, or if they do it every other day, the other person brings something. So they start to get that feeling again of, I heard you. It was allowed to stand without rebuttal, without blame, without resentment, without interpretation. And when we start to practice this again, we can, it's like we're starting to piece together a new tapestry of empathy, right? But it has to be almost done in this artificial way. The other thing that I suggest people do is to see, you know, sometimes there's such difficult pain between people. There's been just, let's say there's been betrayal or whatever it is, that we agree that is there anything else that could happen around this issue that would heal it, would help it, right? And very often the answer is no. We have to make a decision that if we want this commitment, then we need to start again. And it's a big piece of emotional work, but we do need to ask, is there more that you need to say about what happened there? Is there anything that needs to be said? Very often I find that when people revisit those places of real hurt, real hurt, that they're just creating more resentment, that it's not actually any more healing.
And part of that is, and that's especially true for extraordinarily deep hurts, I think at that point in time, having an objective third party who can translate, because sometimes we can't hear it directly from our partner because it's too overwhelming, but it needs to be said, and it's one of the ways out of this loop of no return where, you know, people go, well, my partner's only saying that because they want something, they're manipulating me, and it's like, okay, no, they want the relationship to be better. Now, is that a manipulation? I guess on some level it could be. But, you know, and the one thing that I want to point out is that people can do this without their partner. I mean, if they can learn how to change their own dialogue and let go of their own resentment, then they can actually kind of invite their partner in without their partner even knowing what they're doing.
Absolutely. We don't need the partner's presence there. I think, you know, what you're bringing up is a good point, too, which is we want to look at the identity that we're clinging on to with this resentment, right? So this always happens to me, or I can't trust anybody, or I never get what I want, or, you know, you see he's a dog. Right, all men are dogs, whatever the heck your thing is, right? That why is it still important to us? I mean, sometimes, you know, we really get wounded in the heart and it's not quite so easy to see where the narrative is formed, but very often just the question of why is this so important that I keep bringing it back into my consciousness? What core belief about myself or my life or who, or him or whatever it is, am I strengthening? And what am I really afraid to let go of if I were to move forward? Because so often what I see is that we're afraid that if we let go of these resentments, right, we're somehow letting them off the hook, or we're saying it didn't matter, right? And we're saying that when we do that, it feels like we're abandoning our own pain. We're saying, well, now it's fine. I've gotten fine with it. It didn't really happen. It did, you know, you never did anything. And as if there's an act of wounding all over again. We hold on to these resentments sometimes because we imagine that's taking care of ourselves, even though it's actually inciting suffering.
Well, and that's so true, because that's, you know, I see this when I work with couples, especially when there's infidelity and we're talking about forgiveness. And, you know, forgiveness does not mean that the act was okay. I mean, like I have to tell people, sure. That's not what it means. It's not saying, oh, that it didn't happen and I'm going to forget it and I wasn't hurt. And I was like, no. That's not what this means. It just means making a choice to do something different going forward. And yes, I think we do have to heal some of these things, but we also have to take a look at what's the story that I'm bringing to the table and the interpretation I'm choosing to put on these. And obviously, infidelity, yes, we're talking about something. But I mean, I've been having this interesting, I don't know what exactly to call it. It's not really a problem, but the thing with my husband since the day we met, that he doesn't let me know when he's going to be late. I've actually called the highway patrol on him three times in the 34 years we've been together. Now, this was, of course, also in the days before cell phones, but even now with the cell phone, it's like, can you just let me know you're okay?
Right, which tells you that he cares about your worry. That's all.
Right. And I could, you know, I could gnaw on that and beat him over the head with that, and it's like, you know, it's something I've been asking for like 30 some odd years. I'm probably not going to get it. I'm actually okay with that.
right. And then, you know, you can use it as your own teacher, right?
Right.
As your own spiritual teacher, dealing with that, you know, letting that discontent be, letting the gap between the way I want things to be and the way they are, letting it just exist.
Yeah.
Right? And can I be okay right here in that I don't have a call coming in that I've told him this 100 times, and can I be okay in the middle of all that not okay? That's our beautiful piece of work.
And it's something, and by the way, there's nothing special about me. I'm not going to say, oh, I've got all the answers, because I don't. But I think it does have to do with the balance that our relationship overall is pretty good. So it's like, okay, yeah, I'm choosing to let this go. It's still sometimes like, really? Could you have answered yourself?
Right. And letting go means also accepting that this person is not me. This person does things the way they do things. And it's a lot of maturity in relationship is about realizing, and I mean this in a really beautiful way, but that we are two separate people. Mm-hmm. And creating that space of, you know, let this person be who they are, right? I can't understand it. It's not up to me to fix. And I can also, at the same time, take care of my own sadness sometimes that is the way they are, right?
Yeah.
But rather than trying to eliminate that or turn them into something that I won't have to feel that, I'm allowed to love this person, stay with this person, and also accept that there are parts of them that really bring me sadness.
Mm-hmm. And I so love that, and I wish we could keep talking about this, because I think it's so incredibly important and so incredibly helpful. Nancy, where can people learn more, find out more about you know, this process of healing from resentment and rebuilding empathy and all the other wonderful things that you do?
Yes. Well, my website is a good place to start, which is nancycollier.com, nancycollier.com. And also, I have a whole bunch of articles on the Psychology Today website. The title of the blog is Inviting a Monkey to Tea, as in your own mind. And so I talk a lot there about relationship. And then if somebody's interested, they can give me a call or what have you. And I work with people individually and in couples.
Well, thank you so much. Great.
My pleasure.
And I've long talked about resentment being a killer of relationships. It eats away at the love and goodwill a couple has for each other. And as you've heard today, the good news is it does not have to continue. You can repair your relationship and get it on the right track, but that can only happen if you take the next steps. So hopefully one of those steps will be to keep listening to the show. And until next week, stay loving.